Welcome, and thank you for joining our webinar on the 2014 Farm Bill covering commodity programs and crop insurance. Today's webinar is jointly sponsored and brought to you by the Extension Risk Management Education Centers, the SARA 39 Multi-State Public Policy Issues Education Committee, the Agricultural and Applied Economics Association Extension Section, the Council on Food, Agriculture, and Resource Economics, the Regional Extension Farm Management Committees, and the Ag in Uncertain Times team with technology hosted by Montana State University and the University of Wyoming. Today is just one of many webinars we are hosting on the 2014 Farm Bill and the changes that it may imply. I'm John Hewlett, a Farm and Ranch Management Specialist at the University of Wyoming, and it's certainly an honor to serve as host for today's webinar. Although I'll act as your MC, I'm only able to do so through the help and assistance of many others working behind the scenes to help make these presentations possible. Our team members' support and the support of their respective institutions help to make and offer these various webinars. Today's speakers include Dr. Art Barnaby, Dr. Jody Capici, and Dr. Joe Outlaw. I will provide a much more formal introduction for each of these speakers as we begin their respective presentations, but certainly would like to welcome them all to our program today. Before we get started with the presentations, let me point out that as we proceed, we would very much like to have you enter any questions you may have for the presenters in the chat window found in the lower left of your screen. Then, working with our behind-the-scenes team, I will put the questions to our presenters. So please use that chat window to enter your questions or to report any kind of technical problems you may be having. As we all know, computers enable us to overcome distances and solve many different problems that make webinars like this a possibility. However, that same technology can also create a number of challenges. So if you're experiencing any difficulties on your end, please do not hesitate to contact our team for assistance. If you're having trouble reading the screen at any point in today's webinar, you may want to try using the full screen button. It looks like a set of arrows in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. This button switches between the view you see now and a view where the presentation slide fills the entire screen, making that smaller text easier to read. Please note that while you're in that full screen mode, you'll be unable to see the chat window. So you simply press that button again, and it will reveal the chat window to enter any questions that you might have. So at this point, we'd like to ask a couple of questions about who all may be in our audience this morning. We've got a set of polling questions here. We'd like to ask you if what your role is out there, if you're an agricultural producer, an extension educator, if you may be working in a banking situation, if you're an agribusiness professional, commodity organization employee, or perhaps you're a non-for-profit organization or government agency employee, if you wouldn't mind checking one of those boxes, it gives us a little bit of a heads up as to who all is participating in today's webinar. All right, so thank you for those responses. Our next question is, where is it that you're actually located geographically? If you're in the Northeast region, Southeast, Midwest, Southwest, if you wouldn't mind checking one of those options or that would best represent where you're located. I guess we have choices here also for the Pacific Islands, Western U.S., and if you're coming in from an international location, we've got a choice there for that as well. All right, thank you for those answers. Third question quickly here is your role in agriculture. If you're currently producing and or marketing an agricultural product, I guess choice number one would be the selection there. If you're in the process of developing an agricultural product that you intend to market in the future, choice B, or if you are looking to develop some sort of product to take to a market, I guess C would be the choice. Or possibly if you're just on to gather more information, I guess D would be the selection. If all of the above or some combination apply, E or other would be the choice there. All right, and we have one final question here, which asks, including yourself, how many individuals are participating at your location? This question is a way that we can get a handle on just how many folks that might be participating. When we offer these for free, we aren't actually taking registrations, so the only real way we have is measuring who's all on is by your responses to this question. So I'll give you a second to answer those. All right. Thank you again for your feedback with those polling questions. I'd like to welcome our first speaker for today's program, who is Dr. Art Barnaby. Art was raised on a diversified farm located in Elk County, Kansas. He received his BS degree from Fort Hays State University, his MS from New Mexico State University, and a PhD in agricultural economics from Texas A&M University. Art joined the agricultural economics faculty in 1979, where he currently holds the rank of professor. Art conducts national extension education programs on market risk, government commodity programs, crop insurance, and public policy. He's authored several research projects on crop insurance issues and their impacts on farmers. His research work with the private sector was the basis for the first revenue insurance contract. Art is a past winner of the Excellence in Extension Award presented by the National Association of Public and Land Grant Universities. He's also a three-time winner of the American Agricultural Economics Association Distinguished Extension Program Award. Art is a frequent speaker at professional, farmer-producer, ag-lender, and insurance industry meetings. Art, we very greatly appreciate your willingness to take time out today to share with us your understanding of the changes in crop insurance programs under the new Farm Bill. The floor is yours.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone. Or maybe afternoon, depending on the part of the country. We're going to talk about the changes that came in the Farm Bill that apply to crop insurance today. My first slide is simply our disclaimer that there are many decisions that are left to be made by the Secretary, and so consider this be preliminary analysis. We will continue to update our analysis as we gain additional insight. And many of these rules are, in fact, put in place. Starting off with the changes in crop insurance, the 60% yield plug for replacing low yields in an APH was retained. There was, at one time, consideration of using 70%, but rather than the 70%, bullet point number two applies. If the county has a 50% yield loss, then farmers may drop that year's yield from their APH. The manager's bulletin is really clear on this point. You take those 9 years of yields, leaving out the bad one, and divide by nine. Also, if the county trigger is met more than once, then more than one yield may be excluded. I think this may be the biggest change in the Farm Bill. What this means is that your crop insurance guarantee will not fall in the following year, as it currently does, if you're in a county that has suffered a catastrophe loss. I should also mention you don't actually have to be in that county. If you're in a contiguous county, you also qualify. So that's a major change. Conservation compliance required to receive crop insurance premium subsidies was added to this Farm Bill, but it does give farmers time to fix compliance problems. Out-of-compliance farmers may buy crop insurance, but without the subsidy. One of the questions I have, and don't have an answer for, but could those out-of-compliance farmers elect CAT that only has implied premium? Because there is no premium as such. That implied premium is a relationship between the government and the private insurance companies on who bears the risk. Then it might be possible for those farmers to in fact buy CAT only pay the $300 since there's no premium for CAT. Crop insurance changes continuing there. 10% increase in premium subsidies for beginning farmers. Crop agents are allowed to correct errors. All farmers in conservation compliance and not participating in ARC, that's the agricultural risk coverage, that is part of the Farm Service Agency program, may purchase STACs or SCO. The Risk Management Agency is the one administering SCO and also STACs. SCO covers planted acres, and if the above conditions are met, then SCO can be purchased on cropland that has no base. So in addition to base acres, obviously you can have a lot more acres insured under SCO than would be covered by the Title I programs. Because we're past the crop insurance contract change date, all these changes will not apply until the 2015 crop. The insurance company has a contract with the federal government, and, of course, farmers have a contract with the insurance company. And since they're contracts, you can't just willy-nilly change them. You have to wait until the contract change date to make changes. That's why that is the case, whereas with the farm programs, commodity programs, they can be applied to the 2014 crop and not wait for 15 because there's no contract involved. USDA has an understanding with the Ag Committee that they will follow the Area Risk Protection Insurance program for rating and underwriting. This is what was used to be referred to as GRIP. It is an area plan based off of county losses. In this case, the county will trigger losses, but the actual payment is tied to the deductible and the underlying insurance contract, which we'll get to in a minute. The supplemental coverage is sold via crop agents and private insurance companies and regulated and rated by the risk management agency. The A&O capped at 12%. That's the maximum A&O payment per premium dollar. A&O stands for operating expenses and administrative cost. But the point is, it's outside the $1.3 billion, so there is new money to administer this program. ARPA has no stop loss, and farmers can buy 120%. In the case of SCO, limit is 100% of the crop value and is tied to the insurance insured's deductible. Again, no SCO on ARC or stacks. SCO starts in 2015, while the price loss coverage and the area risk coverage Title I program start in 2014. This is a brief sort of break out the parts of this supplemental coverage. It is strictly a county revenue guarantee. I should also add it can be a county yield guarantee if the person buys a yield protection contract as their primary contract. But most farmers have revenue protection, and so I listed it as county revenue only. The reference prices in this case are the crop insurance prices, and they're based on futures, whereas in Title I, they're based on the marketing year average price. The supplemental coverage covers the revenue protection, RP, with the harvest price excluded, and a yield protection contract. So it covers the deductible that's actually in your individual insurance contract up to 86%. So it's the farmer's APH times crop insurance prices times 86% minus the percent crop insurance coverage. So if you have 80% coverage, then it's going to cover 6% of the deductible. And the type of deductible will be determined by the underlying coverage form, such as revenue versus yield only. The supplemental coverage payment trigger is 86% times the expected county revenue. So the trigger is strictly on the county. Does not matter what happens on your farm. The actual county revenue is then the county yield times the harvest price. And again, that's the insurance price, not the MYA price. And in this case, you take the actual county revenue, divide it by the trigger, adjusted for the crop insurance stop loss, and you come up with a percent county loss. A fairly involved formula that we're not going to get into today. Anyway, we come up with a percent county loss, and that's multiplied times the farmer's liability. Covers all planted acres. The type of coverage is based on the underlying base coverage, RP versus YP, et cetera. Because it is insurance, there's no payment limit, and you can't sequester the payments. because it is in fact a contract. The maximum payment, the stop loss is your coverage level in your insurance contract. So you'll have more dollars of coverage under this program if you have 70% crop insurance than you will if you have 80% crop insurance. In fact, if you have 85% crop insurance, then this is only going to cover 1% of your expected revenue. It's a one-time selection from the standpoint that if you elect ARC, you cannot participate in SCO. However, if you elect PLC or you're not in the farm program but you want to buy crop insurance, you can still do that. But it is an annual decision. You can change your level of underlying crop insurance. You could go from 80% RP to 75% RP and then add the supplemental coverage, which would cover more dollars than if you were at 80. And again, that's an annual decision. You can change it as much as you want to from year to year. This is an example farm that we created to kind of show how this works. 150 bushel APH on this farm, 145 at the county level. I assumed a base price of $5. That's that February average for corn, and calculated the appropriate total revenue. And then I have a harvest price dropping to $430. That won't increase the guarantee under RP because price didn't go up. Then applied the coverage level. I've got 70% in this example. And you end up with a county percent loss of 19%. That assumes 140 bushel county yield and a price dropping from $5 to $4.30. That 19% is then multiplied times the supplemental coverage of $122 in the payment. In that case, it's $22.24. This chart here is describing the supplemental coverage if you have 80% coverage. Notice that with 80% coverage, your SCO coverage dropped from $120 down to $45. You squeeze that in. If you took this all the way to 86%, that would be very few dollars that would be covered by SCO. Over here, we calculated the appropriate percent of that $45 that would be paid out with the yield loss that we had on the previous page. That number works out to 49%. So this farmer would be paid 49% of the $45 would be the indemnity payment. This is the 70% coverage. In this case, I've got $120 because my stop loss is further down the revenue curve, moved it from 80 down to 70, and that's because I dropped my revenue protection from 80% down to 70% coverage. I go through the same formula at the county level, and in this case, works out to 19% loss when you do that ratio, and that's multiplied times $120 to come up with the payment in this case. There is language in the farm bill that says 100% limit on the coverage. The question is, how will that be interpreted by USDA? It might be interpreted as simply expected county yield times the base crop insurance price, which is the spring price, and no adjustment for the harvest price. Therefore, if it is interpreted that way, then increased harvest prices would reduce or eliminate the supplemental county payment trigger. The supplemental coverage dollars of liability would increase for the RP insured farmers because their deductible would now be a larger dollar amount if the price goes up. However, if there's no adjustment for the harvest price in the county trigger, you may well end up with no payment. In the example, if the harvest price increases to $6 and the county's actual yield is 110 bushels, then the SCO coverage increases from $45 to $54 in our 80% example, but the county trigger would equal zero. And bottom line, the result is no payment. So it is critical how they define 100% coverage limit, and much of the SCO is not defined. Here is the example of what I'm showing about a pitcher example. Price goes to 5 to 6, and if we assume no adjustment to, we get additional dollars here of coverage. This is under an 80% RP contract, but the percent county loss comes in at zero under this scenario if there's no adjustment for the harvest price. I should add, under the ARPA insurance contract, the Area Risk Plan insurance contract, there is an adjustment in the county trigger for harvest price. So it could be interpreted, one would think, either way. So until we know that, we won't know for sure how it's going to work with an RP contract, and the RP contract is the most common. Under the scenarios we just did, 80% RP and supplemental coverage, price declines to 430, 140 bushel yield. It's a 49% loss on the county trigger times $45 worth of coverage, gives a payment of $22.24. With a 70% contract, decline from 5 to 430, 140 bushels, and an actual county loss of 19%. Would also generate $22.24. You're maybe wondering why it isn't bigger. It would be if that yield were even lower or the price dropped more, then the payment would become bigger for the 70% scenario. This slide shows the supplemental estimate premium cost for SCO. I've got a 80% RP guarantee at this location. The rate was 6.9%. That works out to $41.66. When you apply the subsidy, the farmer's share of that premium is $13.33. That was estimated under an enterprise unit scenario. The supplemental coverage in this location for an 80% guarantee is $45. I came up with an estimate of about 31% for premium rate, and that makes the gross premium roughly $14, and after the subsidies apply, it brings it down to a little under $5. I think my estimate is probably on the high side, but I think folks need to understand this is supplemental coverage. It's the first dollar of loss. It's likely to pay before the underlying insurance contract pays, and because of that, I would anticipate the rates to be much higher than what many people may expect. In other words, they may have some sticker shock when they see the premium rates, but you need to understand this is the first dollar loss. Once you get about into that guarantee, about 10% down, you've paid out the entire liability. So that is something that we'll have to see exactly how these rates turn out once they're released. Where does SCO fit? Some counties don't have coverage offers greater than 75%. This would allow those counties, farmers in those counties, to buy coverage from 86 down to 75 on an area plan. I know folks in the Corn Belt assumes everybody's got 85% coverage offers, but that's not true. And in some cases, those rates are very high and they're simply unaffordable in the higher risk areas. So they almost become irrelevant even if there is offers above 75. Farmers who have significantly more crop acres than base acres, they're going to get less protection from the Title I program because you're only paid on a percentage of your base acres. This is going to cover all planted acres, so if you got a significant number of acres with no base, that could make a difference in your decision. If the county trigger is not adjusted for the harvest price, then SCO, I would expect to be less attractive buy for the RP-insured farmer. An 80% enterprise unit has a greater subsidy than the SCO. The reason I bring this up is if you're in the Corn Belt in a lower-risk area and you're willing to go to an enterprise unit, that aggregates all your corn yields on your farm into one guarantee. After all, the SCO is aggregating every farmer in that county to a total. So the SCO is more aggregated yields than what it would be to aggregate your individual farm. But in any case, if you were to buy 85% enterprise unit, there would be little incentive to add the supplemental coverage because you're only adding 1% of coverage to your total package. So the point being, if I elect to go into ARC, then I may not be all that concerned about giving up the supplemental coverage because I can buy almost the same amount of coverage individually by simply increasing my crop insurance coverage from my current level to 85%. So it's an alternative you may want to look at. Really risk-adverse corn soybean farmers who are willing to forego a likely small ARC payment because they want to avoid catastrophic price crash might be the ones who would select the PLC and the SCO coverage. So if you're willing to forego maybe a $70 or $80 an acre payment, but you want to avoid the situation where the price of corn drops to $3, then that might influence your decision. I'm not sure how many farmers are that risk adverse, but nonetheless, that would be a case where people where individuals might actually prefer PLC to and the supplemental coverage, especially in the Corn Belt we're talking. One of the critical decisions is how you define county yield. Are we talking about planted acres, harvested acres? Harvested acres plus failed acres. Will failed acres include prevented planted acres? Don't know the answers to those questions, but they really matter. The T yield is a county yield based on planted acres from RMA as opposed to NAS. Trend adjusted expected county yield, I don't know if it'll be done that way, but that's the way the area risk plan is done by crop insurance. Other definitions for county yield that I probably haven't thought about. NAS also has many missing county values, so likely RMA data will need to be used to fill in missing data. The county yield is used to measure that 50% county trigger to allow you to exclude a yield, so that's one place that's really important. ARC uses the county yield, only they use it as an Olympic average, so again, how do you define that county yield, because that's going to determine what that Olympic average looks like. One would assume that under ARPA, the county yields will be the same for SCO. If they are, then those county yields will be trend adjusted. Farmers have a basis risk in SCO that they need to be aware of. It's possible that the farm could suffer a loss, but the county trigger does not trigger, and therefore there's no payment. The point being, though, the bigger the farm, the less basis risk you have. If you think about the extreme, if you farm the whole county, then the farm enterprise unit and the county yield are going to be exactly the same thing. So the larger the farm, the more that farm is going to look like the county and less chance that the county, that they will have a loss on their farm, at least at the enterprise level, and not have the county also trigger. The SCO is going to pay claims about 6 months earlier than either of the other farm, either the price loss coverage or the ARC program, because those payments must wait until the marketing year average price is final. Supplemental coverage payments cannot be sequestered, as I said before, no payment limits. Large farmers will have less basis risk. Based on insurance prices, which might be good, might be bad, covers all planted acres. It's an annual decision to buy. The amount and type of coverage is also an annual decision. Decision and 35% of the premiums paid by farmers. This is FAPRI's estimates of how farmers will participate. They've got what looks like a fairly high rate of participation in supplemental coverage. I think that's going to depend on whether or not that county trigger is adjusted for the harvest price, and also what those premium rates actually look like. Remember, it's the first dollar of loss, and so I don't expect extremely cheap premiums. This is a speech that was given by the secretary, in which he said that ARC and PLC will not begin sign-up until this fall. There will be no cash payments for those programs until the fall of 2015 because one has to wait for the end of the marketing year to actually start making payments. Therefore, the longer it takes to get the thing implemented, the better off farmers are, because more of these things that are forecast will become history. And in addition, the longer it is, the more likely we are to have the premium rates and the expected county yields for spring planted crops prior to making the decision. It would be nice to know, if I select ARC, what did I turn down on the supplemental coverage side? And that means those rates and expected county yields have to be out in the public before one can make that decision. Again, in summary here, no changes to the insurance until 2015 as opposed to 2014 on the FSA program. It is assumed that the SCO will become available on the fall planted wheat crop that will be harvested in 15. If that in fact happens, we'll get some indication of what the premium rates are going to really look like, as well as what the county expected yield will look like. I would manage point out that we operate a website here at Kansas State University, agmanager.info. We cover many of those issues. That is a free service, so if anyone listening would like to be receive an email from us when our ag manager is updated, all you have to do is send that to agmanager.info. I'm not going to be available today to answer questions, but you can contact me by phone, or you can email questions, comments to agmanager.info, and I will get them there. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
Well, no, thank you, Art, for your many and detailed insights into how the Farm Bill is likely to impact crop insurance programs going forward. We very much appreciate your joining us today. We'd like to now transition to our next presenter, who is Dr. Jody Campici, who is an assistant professor at and an extension economist in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Oklahoma State University. She currently holds a joint research and extension appointment specializing in agricultural and food policy. Jody obtained an MS and BS degrees in agricultural economics from Oklahoma State University and a PhD in agricultural economics from Texas A&M University. Her outreach and extension efforts focus on agricultural policy with a concentration on commodity policy. She analyzes federal, state, and local policy alternatives and determines the potential implications of these policies for farmers, agribusiness firms, local and regional economies, the environment, consumers, and taxpayers. Jody provides educational programs to local, state, and federal farm and commodity groups on policy-related issues and provides support to these groups in the preparation and analysis of policy alternatives. Jody, we greatly appreciate your joining us today. The floor is yours.
Okay, well, today what I'm going to go over is the STACS, or the Stacked Income Protection Plan, which is the new supplemental crop insurance program that is only available to upland cotton producers. And, of course, I'm going to start out. I'm going to do a quick example at the end, but just to let you know, all analysis is based on my interpretation of the bill language. This is how I think it's going to go. A couple things could change once it's actually implemented, but I just wanted to put that out there up front. Okay, so as Art talked about the SCO program, STACS is actually a very similar program. Again, it is only available for planted cotton acres. And now that cotton producers are no longer eligible to enroll cotton base acreage in Title I commodity programs, with the exception of the transition of payments for 2014 and possibly 2015 if STACS is not available, this is the new program that many cotton producers may be looking at. It is similar to a group risk income protection policy. Again, producers would pay a premium and receive indemnity payments. It's designed to cover countywide revenue losses and complement a producer's individual insurance policy. So ultimately, what it allows a producer to do is to purchase two crop insurance policies on the same acre of a crop. This is a new concept. Producers have not previously been allowed to stack policies on the same crop. What it does is allow a portion of the deductible of the individual insurance policy to be covered by a county-triggered program. However, it does not provide double coverage. It just allows a producer to stack the layers to provide greater risk protection. So again, a producer would purchase their traditional insurance policy, and the example I'm going to use at the end is a 70% revenue protection policy. They would have the option to purchase stacks coverage, and it would just sit on top of that individual coverage. Now, the key thing to point out about stacks, and SCO would be very similar, is that a producer could have a loss on his or her own farm, and the county may not have a loss, which means that stacks would not pay. So stacks would only issue a payment if the county had a loss. So that's kind of the main thing to keep in mind if producers are not familiar with these area-wide insurance products that pay on county losses. The other thing to mention about stacks is that an individual insurance policy, so a traditional, you know, revenue protection or yield protection policy, is not actually required with stacks. But if a producer does have that individual policy, stacks would just sit on top and cover losses ranging between 10 to 30% of expected county revenue. So the range of coverage available is going to be the minimum of 90%, because you need to have at least a 10% loss, minus the individual policy coverage level, or 30%. So let's just use an example and say a producer has a 70% revenue protection policy. So the minimum would be 20%. So it would be 90 minus 70 is 20%. Or 30%, 20% is less, so then his range of coverage in this scenario would be 20%. Now, I mentioned earlier, it just sits on top of an existing policy, which means that overlap is not allowed. So a producer with 80% coverage on an individual policy could only get up to 10% coverage under stack, because we're just going up to 90%. A producer with 70% coverage on an individual policy could just get up to 20% coverage under stacks. Now, with stacks, coverage is available in 5% increments, and it is subsidized at 80%. So producers would pay 20% of the premium with stacks. So that's something to compare to an individual policy, depending on what the coverage level is. Say a producer has 70% policy, the premium would be 59%. However, producers who have enterprise units are already receiving a higher subsidy, so that's something to consider, that the premium for this might not be much different than the premium for the enterprise unit that they may already have. Now, a key difference between stacks and SCO is that with stacks, producers have the option to select a payment rate multiplier up to 120%. This option, as it currently stands, is not available with SCO. And the way the multiplier concept works, again, is very similar to the GRIP insurance programs. It just accounts for the increased variability of individual farm yields as compared to county average yields. So it would just allow producers with above average farm yields to purchase a higher level of coverage. So, of course, the higher level of coverage would result in a slightly higher premium as well. But, you know, any producer with below or above average yield could choose a coverage level above the county average if they're willing to pay a higher premium. So the way it works is it would increase the maximum protection per acre, but it wouldn't impact the trigger revenue required to actually receive a stacks indemnity. And just allows producers to choose, you know, whichever multiplier they think allows them to attain a closer match between their individual loss expectations and their county-level stacks coverage. And again, this is important because, as I mentioned earlier, stacks is paid on county losses. So producer could have a loss on their individual farm. the county may not have a loss, and then a STAX payment wouldn't be issued. Okay, so let's walk through a real quick example, a pretty simple one here. So with STAX, we want the expected county revenue first. Okay, so to get that, it's going to be the maximum of the county trend yield or the five-year average county yield. And in this example, I used the county trend yield. Let's say it's 300. The five-year average yield is 350. So obviously the maximum is 350. We're going to multiply that by the maximum of the projected price and the harvest price. And right now I'm still assuming that STAX is going to operate like that, and it would take the higher of the projected or the harvest. In this case, I used 80 cents for the projected price, 90 cents for the harvest price. So we would take 90 cents, get an expected county revenue of 315. Our range of coverage, I'm assuming a producer has a 70% revenue protection policy, so his range of coverage is going to be 90% minus 70% or 20%. I'm going to use a multiplier of 1. We'll assume they can choose a multiplier of 0.8 through 1.2. I'm going to go with 1, so a maximum payment would be $63. Okay, how do we know if a payment is triggered? Well, we take actual county revenue, so I'm going to take an actual county yield of 250 multiplied by the harvest price of 90 cents and get 225. If that is less than the expected county revenue times 90%, so again, we take 90% of expected county revenue, a payment would be triggered. In this case, expected county revenue times 90% is 283. So yes, a payment would be triggered. How do we get to that payment loss calculation? Well, we take the maximum of 0 and 90% times our actual county revenue divided by the expected county revenue. So we get a payment loss of about 65%. Moving along, getting to the payment per acre, it's going to be the minimum of that 63 that we calculated above, and the payment loss times expected county revenue times our payment multiplier. So in this case, the payment per acre is about $63 per acre. Now, I know what a lot of people have questions about is, okay, well, what is this kind of coverage going to cost? And some of the things that I've seen, mostly out of the Policy Center at A&M, they've been looking at some of the costs, and it looks like for something along this type of coverage could range from about $5 to $7 per acre as the farmer paid premium. But again, I haven't seen the final estimates of what those premiums would be, but that's just kind of a quick range. And it falls along with Art's discussion about SCO. I think his premium, farmer paid premium, was about $5 as well. Now, the one thing I want to point out as well before I finish up is that with cotton, cotton producers actually have the option to choose STAX or SCO on planted cotton acres. And I suggest looking at both of the options. SCO is subsidized less than STAX, but SCO does incorporate the farm APH yield where STAX doesn't. However, STAX takes the higher of the county trend yield or the five-year average yield where SCO doesn't. So there's a couple of differences in there that a producer may want to look at. And that pretty much wraps it up for STAX, so I'll let them get started on the next presentation.
Before we launch into that next presentation, Jody, and thank you very much for your comments, I've got a couple of questions that have come in, if you wouldn't mind answering those at this point. The first one asks, do you anticipate that it'll be more expensive to purchase the buy-up coverage under STAX versus the MPCI policy?
I anticipate that it will be less than an MPCI policy if the policy is not enterprise units. Now, comparing the enterprise versus STAX, I'm not sure. I think they'll probably be close.
Okay, great. So next question from the audience is, what is the anticipated sign-up period when STAX will initially be made available to folks? Do we know that yet?
Well, it's not available until the 2015 crop year. So this 2014 crop year, those with cotton base will still receive transition assistance payments, which is similar to the direct payments, but paying on a lower percentage of base acres than direct payments, so not until next year.
Okay, great. Thank you for those answers. We'll go ahead and proceed with our third presentation at this point. which will be made by Dr. Joe Outlaw, who is a professor and extension economist in the Department of Agricultural Economics at Texas A&M University. He also serves as the co-director of the Agriculture and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M, and in this role, he frequently interacts with members of Congress and key agricultural committee staff to provide feedback on the likely consequences of agricultural policy changes. He's received numerous awards in excellence for his agricultural policy education efforts to help U.S. farmers with farm program sign-up decisions. Dr. Outlaw is a native of Divine, Texas, and he received his B.S., M.S., and Ph.D. degrees at Texas A&M University. Joe, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. We're very much looking forward to your comments, and so without further preamble, please go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to move right through this relatively fast. Hopefully, you've already heard that we have disclaimers at this point that we don't know everything about how the bill is going to be interpreted in the longer run, but we have made a lot of things available to you to kind of get you started. With regard to the commodity programs, these are the covered commodities that you hear. You heard both Art and Jody talking about. The commodity programs are essentially the same as what we had before, less upland cotton. This farm bill repeals the direct payments, countercyclical payment program, and acre. And obviously for the 2013 crop, since acre and CCP use marketing year prices, there's still a chance that there will be some payments made, depending on how the prices work out for that marketing year. But going forward, for the 2014 crop, producers are going to choose between agricultural risk coverage, what we call the ARC program, and a price loss coverage, what is acronym is PLC. As it says here, there's a lot of discussion about whether ARC is a shallow loss program, more or less, and PLC is a deep loss program, but there's a lot more to it than that. But essentially, there's good choices to have as covered commodity producers, and each are going to have to make some decisions. Regardless, as Jody mentioned earlier, regardless of which program producers choose, the first payment they could receive if the one was eligible would be after September 30th of 2015. So we're looking at using marketing year prices, which means that any losses would be paid much after the fact. Producers also in this bill are going to have the opportunity to reallocate their base acres to crops that they have planted during the 2009-12 crop years. And I've got a lot of questions over that. So I've got a couple of examples to work through. One of the things that's interesting is as upland cotton is no longer a covered commodity, those base acres, if they just went away, then some farms would have a lot of acres that would basically have less value going forward. And so to make that not happen, Congress allowed them to have their base acres converted to generic acres, and I will discuss that as well. Finally, for those producers, the bill says very carefully that if for those producers who chose price loss coverage option, those producers would have the opportunity to update their payment yields to 90% of the 2008 to 2012 crop year averages. There is some discussion going on that USDA may allow everyone, regardless of their choice of farm program, to update those payment acres. So the choice for payment acres is basically leave them where they are now using the current CCP yields or update to 90% of the 2008 to 12 averages. And again, it's nice to have for producers to have choices. The covered commodities, as I mentioned earlier, are pretty much what we've had in the past, less upland cotton. In terms of base reallocation, that's one of the things I get most of my questions about, that this is a choice between leaving them the way they are and reallocating the existing base acres. So basically, one of the things that you have to think of is whatever the bases were on September 30th, 2013, those cotton bases at that point in time are they're renamed generic base, and just think of them as being set aside. With regard to the reallocation, how that works is it's the four-year average of planted acres to each crop from 2009 to 12, plus prevented planting divided by the four-year average of all covered commodities plus prevented planting. So one of the things that all this makes, the last time we had any kind of ability to update bases was in the 2002 Farm Bill, and this reallocation is different than that. One of the things that people need to make sure and understand right off the bat is the number of base acres on the farm will not change because of this. It's just because of the Farm Bill, this Farm Bill pays on base acres, not planted acres. They're allowing a reallocation so that a producer who had a basis of a crop that they're no longer producing could have a chance to reallocate those bases to crops they're producing now, which would give them more protection on what they're actually planting. This is a really nice thing. So a quick example that, as you see at the bottom, is put together by the House Agriculture Committee staff. And again, when you start allocating the reallocation, is only on for covered commodities. So a quick example with corn, sorghum, soybeans, and wheat. On that farm, it was a 1,000-acre farm that had 1,000 acres in wheat base. And so the choice for the producer on this farm would be leave it all in wheat base or reallocate it among the crops that were planted over the last 4 years. And as you can see, corn had a 50% share and sorghum and soybeans had a 25% share, and it didn't plant any wheat. So a reallocation would be 500 acres of corn, 250 acres of each soybeans and sorghum. So that's really the choice, and producers are going to have to make that decision for the 2014 time period when sign-up begins. Looking at a little bit more complicated example, some producers will have non-covered commodities on the farm, and they've been planting them. An example here is alfalfa. The choice for the producer for this type of situation is maintain the 1,000 base acres of wheat or reallocate your acres based on those covered commodities that are planted. So the big change here is you eliminate the 200 acres of alfalfa, and when you divide, you're dividing by 800 rather than 1,000, and so it becomes 750 acres of corn, 125 each of sorghum and soybeans. So that producer would have that choice. The last example is including cotton. And basically, as you can see from the example, it had 500 acres of cotton base and 500 acres of wheat base initially. And what, like I said, as of September 30th, 2013, that 500 acres of cotton base has now become generic base and it's set aside. And then you do the reallocation of the acres among the crops that were planted during the 2009 to 12 time period. And you can see that essentially once you set aside the other 500, then you're reallocating the other 500 acres that was in wheat. It could be 375 corn, 62.5 for each sorghum and soybeans. Producers are going to have these choices, and again, do you have to do it? No, but it makes perfect sense to do this when your farm program benefits are tied to these base acres. You would like to have them on the crops that you're actually producing on. Now, with regard to cotton base becoming generic, this actually matters to obviously cotton producers, but it matters as they may plant other crops. As I said earlier, that cotton base was on September 30th, 2013, renamed generic base. I have some examples of here of why this was done, but essentially, this base is generic, and on an annual basis, depending upon what the producer plants, that's how they allocate that generic base out. And I've got a couple of examples to run through to do that as well. My example is very straightforward and simple. It's a 100-acre farm. Base acres on it were 500 wheat, and it was 50 wheat and 50 cotton that is now generic. If in 2014 the producer plants 50 acres of wheat and 50 acres of sorghum, they have their original 50 acres of wheat base, but the generic base is allocated out based on the percentage of each of the covered commodities they planted. Well, in this case, they planted 50-50, so half of the generic goes to wheat and half of it goes to sorghum, and that's how this would be allocated out. So even though they planted 50-50 wheat and sorghum, they would actually end up with 75 acres of wheat base and 25 acres of grain sorghum base. Taking that same example and just say, what if the producer had planted all 100 acres to wheat? They had their original 50 acres of wheat base, and then because all 100% of the they planted 100% to one covered commodity, then all 50 acres of generic was allocated to wheat. So the farmer has protection on all 100 acres of wheat that they have planted. The last example is what happens if that farmer chooses to plant all their ground to cotton. Well, obviously for the cotton, those generic acres are what we call idled for the year, meaning that when you plant cotton, generic bases are not they're not in action. They're just basically sitting on the sidelines until you're not planting cotton. But when you do plant cotton, they're idled, and the farmer, in this case, would have 100 acres planted of cotton, but they would still have protection on 50 acres of wheat base. One of the interesting questions we get is why is that so? And the answer is because this farm bill, much like the last two, are decoupled payments. And so you might have bases in one commodity, and with that comes government protection if things go wrong, and planted others. So this would be treating cotton just the same as other covered commodities. One of the quick reference prices are used in this farm bill. Basically, you could think of them as target prices, but these prices are now called reference prices, and they're used in the price loss coverage program, and they're also used in ARC, and I'll explain that. But they have been increased over what they were in the previous farm bills. With regard to the marketing loan rates, these marketing loan rates basically did not change over time, and I will have to make a quick note that with regard to other oilseeds on both the reference prices and the marketing loan rates, the other oilseeds, that should be dollars per hundredweight instead of bushels before people get too excited and think they're going to be rich. This overhead, that's flow chart of Title I producer choices for covered commodities, put this together to try to give you an idea of what the decisions are with regard to this farm program. The first one that's kind of on the left-hand side, it's a circle shaped kind of like a donut. In 2014, producers will have to make the base reallocation decision, and they'll have to choose between ARC and PLC for each FSA farm number they have, and on each farm they can choose. They must choose ARC or PLC for each covered commodity. Now there's some nuances, and at the bottom you can see the fine print that says if the folks who make this decision on the farm can't agree, then they would be out of the program for 2014 crop, and then they would get PLC for 2015 and beyond. But let's assume that the choices are going to be made, and there's a choice between ARC and price loss coverage as well. Within ARC, there's a county ARC version and an individual ARC version. The big difference there is county ARC uses county yields and national average prices, where individual ARC uses information for the entire farm. So if you choose individual ARC, then that entire FSA farm number, that farm is in individual ARC for all commodities. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a few minutes, but essentially, county ARC could be chosen on every commodity on a farm, or you could intersperse county ARC for one crop and choose PLC on another. But if you choose individual ARC, that entire farm is in individual ARC. When you look at the choice between choice for price loss coverage, producers will have the opportunity to update those payment yields, as I discussed earlier. And I have this line drawn, and on the right-hand side it talks about Title 11, which is the crop insurance area. One of the things that is really interesting in this farm bill is that these choices between base reallocation and choice between ARC and PLC have to be made in 2014, but If you've only if you've chosen price loss coverage, could you purchase SCO beginning in a 2015 crop? So at least for producer meetings that I've been doing, I've been trying to encourage people to take a life of the farm bill approach to making this decision between these two choices. They're both good. They can't really make a bad choice here. But if they did want to have access to supplemental coverage option, they were going to have to at least consider price loss coverage along the way. So one of the interesting points is who the farm bill is very clear and who's supposed to make these decisions. The base reallocation decision and the yield update decision, as specified in the bill, are the landowner. And throughout, in most tenant and landlord arrangements, the landlord has signed over a power of attorney, and there's a lot of discussion of whether they have to get new ones or that sort of thing. But essentially, as far as who makes this decision right now, it's pretty clear these two decisions are in the case of the landowner. The bill also is very clearly decides that the ARC PLC decision is made by the producers on the farm. And as it says here at the bottom of the overhead, producers basically those who share in risk. So for a share lease arrangement, since the tenant and the landowner are both sharing in the risk, you would think that would be a joint decision. For a cash lease, it's at least implied where all the risk is on the tenant. It's at least implied that there would be a decision would rest for the tenant. One of the things that we get asked a lot is, what happens if the farm changes hands and it, the farm bill reads as if that decision is going to stay with the farm over the life of the bill, regardless of if it changes hands between tenants. I put together just a quick example. This is the example of the price loss coverage with for corn with a preference price of $370. And the ability of supplemental coverage option to actually lay on top of that and sets on top of the individual crop insurance depicted here in yellow and goes up to 86%. So it does provide the opportunity to augment crop insurance, SCO does. At the same time, PLC is providing a price protection from low and declining prices. Not going to go through this very much, but basically the calculations for price loss coverage are very similar to what we had for CCP. Calculated payment rate times payment yield times base acres times 0.85. If you look at county ARC, there would be a revenue benchmark established by the previous 5 years. Marketing your prices times county yields, dropping the high and the low. And so that's basically a three-year average, establishes a revenue benchmark, and then ARC would protect from 86% down to 76%. So there'd be basically a 14% deductible relative to the benchmark. The revenue guarantee would start at 86% and go down to 76%. And for areas around the country, depending upon where their crop insurance is purchased, there would be no, if they purchase high enough levels of crop insurance, there would be no break for other parts of the country that don't buy very high level of crop insurance coverage. There would be a portion not covered, and that's something that producers would need to keep in mind when they do make these decisions. The specifics on ARC, there are, again, as I said, there's ARC County and ARC Individual. Kind of got some of the calculations here. There are the ability to use plugs to replace low yields, and the reference price replaces low prices in the benchmark establishment. One of the interesting parts, elements of ARC is it does allow for, on a county basis, to be, you can break out, say, dry land and irrigated sorghum could be broken out, and you could do the county ARC for each separately, which is a nice feature. With regard to ARC Individual, this plan is a bit more complicated. There's a lot less details available at this point. One of the things that's important to realize is that park individual is going to pay on base acres times 0.65 relative to Arke County, which pays on 85% of base acres. One of the reasons why this is more complicated is because on an individual basis, it's going to look at what has the revenue streams that have been generated on the farm in the past to establish a benchmark for the farm, and then it's going to pay on base acres, depending on how this revenue stream goes forward. It's a lot like the SURE program, and it does calculates the revenues for the entire farm. That's the reason why if you choose it for one crop on the farm, you've chosen it for all. With regard to payment limits, the bill makes payment limits a combined limit for ARC, PLC, LDPs, and marketing loan gains at $125 per person using direct attribution, with the husband and wife eligible for $250,000. Does maintain separate limits for peanuts at $125. Doesn't place a limit on marketing loan forfeitures if they were to occur. Combines the AGI limits that we had three in the past, and now we have one, $900,000 per three-year average adjusted gross income limit that would affect commodity program and conservation program benefits. If you hit that $900,000 in any year, then you would be ineligible for benefits in that year. The bill also provides directs the secretary to conduct rulemaking to define contribution of significant active personal management and determine if that needs to be changed as a condition for eligibility for payments. And this is something where a number of members in Congress were unhappy with persons from around the country who don't live near the farm claiming management gaining them the ability to have payment limits, to have a limit. So one of the things it does do, the bill also says that if whatever the secretary does, that for entities that are made up of solely family members, then they would not be subject to whatever rules the secretary does come up with. That was a really quick run-through of the major decisions on Title I. I'd left off, as you probably acknowledged, that I didn't talk about the dairy provisions of Title I because they've already had a webinar on that recently. But obviously, there's a lot still that has to be worked out, but producers do have some really fine choices, and they are encouraged to look into these choices. And you know, apparently we're going to have quite some time before sign-up starts. And because of that, they'll have a lot of time to kind of evaluate where they need to go with this. So thank you all very much for your time, and I look forward to your questions.
Joe, thank you very much for your many thoughts on the changes to the commodity programs under the new Farm Bill. We have a number of questions that have come in here, and we'll try to get through as many of those as we can. The first one asks, if you know or not whether or not the state institutions or institutions of higher learning will be eligible for the PLC or ARC or all or both or some combination thereof?
Well, in the past, most government and state institutions are basically in that realm. Most of them have been ineligible for benefits for those commodity programs. So I would assume that those rules are going to be very similar.
Okay, great. Next question is, do you know with the base reallocation how prevented planted acres will be determined? Will a producer get credit for all the acres reported to FSA, or get credit for only a historical average planting of the crop, like under crop insurance to earn a payment? And then what about buy-up coverage under that?
With regard to reallocation, the bill very clearly says that if it was considered to have been planted, then it's going to count towards being able to reallocate that to that in that direction. So using that example, I guess, really, if you were to go through and add your own numbers up of what you've planted or considered planted each of these years, the last 4 years, then you'd be able to include those acres, and so you would be able to have a reallocated base for cropland that you actually hadn't even gotten a chance to produce if you'd had a loss each, if you had been prevented planting each year. So that it's going to just allow you to redirect those acres to those acres that had been prevented planting on.
Okay, it's clearly going to be somewhat complex as we move forward, so thank you for that explanation. I'd like to transition now, if we could, to a more of a panel-type Q&A for the balance of our time. We've got a number of questions here, so try to get through as many of those as we can. Jody, I'm hoping you're still on. We have a few questions here, actually, for you, too. The first of which is, do you know how it will work that the overlap functions in conjunction with, say, the 120% buy-up coverage?
I would ask if Joe wants to explain that a little bit better. I don't know that I have a great explanation of that. We actually don't have those GRIP-type policies here in Oklahoma.
Essentially, all these questions are good questions, but they're more complicated than it's easy to talk over the phone. But the whole purpose of having the 120% portion to buy up is that what you're trying to do is allow producers to gain more coverage, a bigger payment. Now they pay for it, but I don't necessarily think, and we haven't had that much experience in Texas with this either, Jody, but I'm not sure why we would, you know, you could, what it amounts to is that the producers are going to be able to increase that payment without having to, the established payment would be, say, $20 an acre, but you could multiply that by 120, and they'd be paying for the right to get a little bit larger payment if one was triggered. Essentially, that, you know, this only relates to SACs. Most people with regard to stacks are going to be either making the decision to buy stacks with the buy-up or stacks alone. And in that case, if it's stacks alone, there won't be any overlap at all because, you know, unlike SCO that has to have an underlying policy, stacks does not. So I don't know. I mean, the answer is it's complicated, but there might be some chance for overlap, but in my mind, the producer's paying for it.
Okay, fair enough. Jody, another question for you. This questioner asks, if the majority of the cotton in a county is irrigated, would stacks still apply in that case?
My interpretation of it is that would be irrigated and non-irrigated, but maybe Joe has a better answer to that, so that there would be stacks for irrigated versus non-irrigated.
Stacks does allow for breaking it out and having a different protection on irrigated cotton and or dryland cotton separately. That's a pretty big deal. Obviously, what you're going to find is the irrigated cotton, if you bought stacks on it, and I suggest you do that, is going to be cheaper than the dryland cotton policy, and it will trigger differently. Because basically on that policy, you're going to have a lot less yield risk and you're going to have the same price risk, but a lot less yield risk, so it's going to be cheaper. But with regard to answer the question, clearly a producer is going to have the option to have irrigated stacks and dryland stacks.
Okay. That probably helps explain it a fair amount there as far as the differences. So thank you. This question, Joe, is really more directed to you, I believe, in your comments, and it's a difference between MPCI versus SCO. So the questioner asks, what would motivate an individual purchases, say, a 70% MPCI to want to buy a supplemental policy particularly where that would increase the cost of coverage even further without maybe realizing what additional coverage is actually being provided.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little bit tricky, because the supplemental coverage option is intended to allow producers to protect a portion of their deductible. So if you're in an area that deductibles is small, and I'd say 70 is kind of in the middle, then what you're saying is, I'm willing to pay some money for the ability to not have to lose 30% of my revenue before I would have insurance to kick in. One of the things that Art would probably not, if he was on the line right now, we've had conversations since he's taped this, and his warnings about how high the cost of SCO coverage is going to be a lot less today than they would be when he recorded this. But the reality is why would someone be willing to do this? It's very simple. If you have the cost of in certain areas of the country because of weather problems, the cost of 70% coverage is very expensive. And with SCO, one of the things you can do is you can buy lower levels of coverage, individual coverage, and then protect a larger portion with the highly subsidized supplemental coverage option, therefore cheapening up your insurance and essentially getting the same coverage. Now, just as Art mentioned, if you're not high, if your yields and your, if you have a, you're such an, you're situated in such a county that your yields are not very highly correlated with the county average, then you do expose yourself to not getting a payment because the county didn't trigger when you did have a loss. But the other side is true as well. You can get a payment whenever you didn't have a loss, but the county did. So these are things to consider, but essentially, to cheapen up crop insurance is one reason why people would do this.
Okay, fair enough. That explains it probably about as good as we can at this point. Jody, another question come in here directed specifically to Stacks. If you wouldn't mind trying to take this one. Questioner states that they understand that the cotton base is only eligible for Stacks where the base was planted to another crop. So will cotton-based producers have a choice between SCO and Stacks?
It is my understanding that cotton producers with cotton base who also plant cotton have the option to choose between SCO or Stacks. They couldn't get Stacks and SCO on the same acreage, but they could choose between one or the other.
Now, I might SCO add just a quick...
go ahead.
Let me just add, one of the things that... Since cotton is now being protected only by crop insurance, the base acres has zero to do with this anymore. That, you know, whatever you plant of cotton, just like everything in the past, crop insurance is on all your planted acres, and that's the way you need to think about cotton going forward. Stacks will be on planted acres of cotton.
Well, that explains that a fair amount. So thank you, Joe, for that. Another question, Joe, probably is best handled by you, given your perspective on how things are kind of developing here. The questioner is asking, will we have access to some kind of a central location to find out what the county yields are, revenues might be for each county that will be used for the programs, whether it be SCO, ARC, Stacks, et cetera? Is there going to be some kind of a clearinghouse we'll be able to look that up at?
Well, actually, it's the answer should be yes, but I can't promise you that. What makes this all interesting is that for purposes of calculating payments, it's apparent that ARC is going to use more what we call a NAS county yield, and the crop insurance programs use an RMA county yield, and those don't have to be the same. So the question of asking for where can I find this is really nice. One of the reasons why Stacks and SCO aren't available yet is because those area yields, RMA doesn't have them yet, and that's one of the things that they're working on to develop. So I would assume, this is, again, an assumption, that once they're developed, they will be available, because to make these choices, you really need to know how much coverage you're going to get, which you need to know those yields. As soon as they're, you know, that's the point. I guess the point is that they should be available from the risk management agency fairly soon, probably within a, well, these products don't have to be sold till next year, so it probably is going to be soon, actually.
But likely will be available at the time where the rules have been released and folks are now considering what choices they have available, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, all right. Joe, one question here came in specifically related to your presentation, is asking about the graphic that you used. It shows that yields can be updated using PLC. The question is, can the producer update yields and use ARC?
Well, this is one of those things that's going to be clearly up to USDA and the Secretary to make the decision. The Farm Bill clearly reads that producers who chose price loss coverage could choose to update their yields. But this person, much like a lot of people, are saying, well, I'd like to choose ARC, but I'd like to update my payment yield just because I might not have another opportunity before the next farm bill that might be used. The next programs may use payment yields, and I would not like to forego the option to do that, if even though I'm not choosing PLC. As I said, this is going to be one of those where we're going to have to find out. There's someone, USDA is going to have to make a decision on that.
All right. Well, thank you both very much for your questions and answers, your willingness to stick with us today. We had a number of questions came in, but in the interest of time, we'll move now to wrap up. We very much appreciate your thoughts and observations. But as we close, I want to remind everyone that this program, today's program, is one in a series of topics that we're trying to cover the details of the Farm Bill. We have several others that are scheduled coming up. The next one on March 31st will cover the conservation title, issues related to horticulture and beginning farmer programs. On April 7th, we're looking at covering the nutrition title and food policy program changes. And then on the 14th, we're looking at covering fruits and perennial crops, vegetable-type production, small farms, some food safety issues, and a number of other topics there that are still somewhat in planning. We very much would like to hear from you that are in the audience. If you have thoughts or ideas about topics or presentations you would like to see us offer in the future, you certainly are welcome to enter those thoughts into the chat pod there at the left. Or if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that to the email address information@farmmanagement.org. As mentioned earlier, the recordings and other information are available from today's presentation at the website agandincertaintimes.farmmanagement.org. Our team has hosted something north of 100 individual presentations since we began our efforts back in 2009. And at the URL on the screen, we have posted presenter slide sets, presentation recordings in video and audio formats, as well as links to external resources mentioned by the various speakers. If you're interested in a copy of any today's presentation slides or other recordings, we invite you to visit the site at your convenience for more information. And finally, we have offered a number of different URLs and suggestions for things you may want to follow up with throughout the webinar today. So in order to provide you with a single reference for all that information, we've compiled a single PDF file that you may now download using the file share pod on the screen. And you can do that by clicking on the file name there and then the Save to My Computer button at the bottom to download the file to your own desktop. So let me close by again extending our thanks to all of today's speakers for their very first-class presentation on commodity programs and crop insurance. A thank you, too, to all of our sponsors for their help in putting on this webinar series. And thanks also to our Ag and Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for making this series possible. We'd also like to thank all of the participants in today's webinar. We certainly hope that you find today's content of value in your work. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs. And until then, we offer you our sincerest wishes for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. Until then, and for Ag in Uncertain Times, I'm John Hewlett.